ShareCare, helping you find experts, the top minds in health and medicine. It's ShareCare Radio with Dr. Daria Long Gillespie on RadioMD.com.
Hi, it's Dr. Daria. Welcome to ShareCare Radio. I hope you like that introduction music as much as I do. It always makes me happy every week. Today, we're going to have an amazing show. Remember, if you miss anything or you want to go back, you can go to sharecare.com/RadioMD. You can download every segment that we had there, find out more about our fantastic guests, and just really catch up. So let's jump into the news of the week this week. The first was about a new study and looking at how much people spend time sitting during their leisure time. And it actually found that that may be associated with a higher risk of cancer in women. So the study looked at 146,000 men and women. So you can't say that it was a small number. And it was done by the American Cancer Society as part of their prevention study. They looked at those who spent more of their leisure time sitting had a higher risk of cancer. Now that was cancers like multiple myeloma, invasive breast cancer, and ovarian cancer. So the key takeaway is the American Cancer Society guidelines for cancer prevention suggests reducing your time spent sitting as much as possible. We need to figure out more about how it is associated with cancer, but the guidelines are great for that. Get up, walk around, and be more active in general, and you're going to be able to combat that. Now, another study related to exercise, and that was new research suggests that older adults can improve their brain function by increasing their fitness level. Now, the indicated that the intensity of the exercise seemed to matter more than the duration. So for this study, they looked for 6 months conducted with healthy adults ages 65 and older who didn't have any signs of dementia or cognitive decline. Now, the trial attempted to determine the ideal amount of exercise necessary to achieve the benefits to the brain. So the participants were either placed in a group that had no monitored exercise, a group that moderate exercised for the recommended 150 minutes per week, a group that exercised for 75 minutes, or one for 225 minutes. Now, all of the groups who exercised saw benefits. So in general, any exercise is better than no exercise at all. Those who experienced the most benefits were those who exercised more, specifically in areas of visual and spatial processing. Now, participants who exercised also showed an increase in their overall attention levels and ability to focus. So get moving. Both of these studies suggest the more we're moving, the better off we will be for our health now and for our health 10, 15, and 50 years in the future. Now, you may have seen some news last week about the FDA strengthening some labeling about ibuprofen and NSAID medications. We touched on it a little bit last week, and it's just still essentially one of the same rules. Is the FDA didn't state the magnitude of increased risk from taking NSAIDs, but they said that they can increase the risk of heart attack and stroke. So I talked to Dr. Keith Roach, our chief medical officer, and he estimated that at most about 1 to 2 people will have a heart attack or stroke for every 1,000 people taking NSAIDs every year. And again, NSAIDs, that's medications like ibuprofen, Advil, Motrin are both the same. Then Naproxen, Aleve, all of those are in the NSAID family. Now, of course, just like any medication, NSAIDs have risks and benefits. And what we always want to emphasize is, yes, a lot of these are over-the-counter, but that does not mean that they're any less likely to have some side effects as well, and to be they need to be treated like regular medications and prescription medications. So key takeaway, NSAIDs continue to be safe for the vast majority of people. But they can do have their own side effects. So really aim to take the least dose effectively, the least effective dose for you and for the shortest amount of time possible. Now, this next study was on juvenile arthritis, and it suggested that children treated with antibacterial drugs may face a greater risk of developing juvenile arthritis. Now, the study found that children and teenagers prescribed antibiotics at about twice the risk of developing that compared to kids who hadn't been prescribed antibiotics. They did this by looking at around between 4,300 and 9,700 U.S. kids below 16 are diagnosed with juvenile arthritis each year, according to the CDC. Now, what is that? It can cause pain and swelling in the joints and other symptoms, too, like fever, rash, and even eye inflammation. Now, this study included more than 450,000 children in the UK, ages 1 to 15, who were diagnosed from 1994 to 2013. They looked at who had gotten antibiotic prescriptions amongst all of them and compared that to healthy children without arthritis and concluded that taking antibiotics was linked to double the risk for the disease. So what's a key takeaway? Is it that antibiotics cause juvenile arthritis? No, that is not the takeaway we can get. We really don't know, but we know that Antibiotics, just like over-the-counter drugs and any other drugs, they are a medication and they can have effects. We know that antibiotics are often overprescribed for many infections that could resolve without treatment. They can have severe side effects such as allergic reaction and diarrhea, and now they may impact chronic disease. So again, always smart to use these medications judiciously. Okay, a study for all you dads out there, and this is about how fatherhood can impact your waistline. We know mothers and women can struggle with it, but dads, you're at risk too, so pay attention. A new study from the American Journal of Men's Health analyzed the BMI of more than 10,000 men from adolescence through their mid-30s. They then compared three groups: non-fathers, resident fathers who live with their children, and non-resident fathers. And they showed that dad groups showed the increase in BMI the most between adolescence and fatherhood. So they took an average 6 foot tall man living with his child, gained an average of 4.4 pounds after becoming a dad for the first time. Non-resident fathers gained on average 3.3 pounds, while the non-fathers lost an average of 1.4 pounds over the same period. You know, changes in the BMI for non-fathers were essentially attributed solely to age. So what's the key takeaway? Okay, parenting is stressful, and I know it's hard for me to fit in exercise, and it's easy to cheat on your diet too when you're really, really tired. But this just points to the fact that we really need to pay attention, because dads, you got to be healthy for your kids, and you're also role models for them. The good thing is that having a child is a great way to get out and get some exercise, go out, get a play a game of tag, run around, play catch, just get out there and play, and you're going to be able to do that with them for a lot longer time. Now, this next study looked at postmenopausal women, and they said that postmenopausal women have significantly greater volumes of fat around their hearts than premenopausal women. Now, what is that? Okay, so fat around your heart raises your risk for heart disease, and cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death in women, and it increases after women go through menopause. Now, we know that changes in body fat metabolism and distribution as a result of menopause often related to the fluctuations in our hormones and can lead to that excess fat around the heart that's even more harmful than abdominal fat. It causes inflammation and it leads to worsening of heart disease. Now, for this study, they took blood samples and looked at heart CT scans. They also checked the levels of hormone estradiol, which is a type of estrogen. And they found that, as we know, that declines during menopause. And as that declined more cardiovascular fat was found. So what does this tell us? We know that as women go through menopause and their levels of estrogen decline, they do have these increasing rates of cardiovascular disease. So it's even more important to educate them on health and wellness and nutrition so they can combat those effects and make themselves continue to stay healthy and maintain their health. Now, this next study, again, anything for parents, I'm always interested in. And this was a new study found a link between a child's social skills in kindergarten and how well they were doing in early adulthood. So if this was just math performance in kindergarten, I can see a link. But this was actually social skills, too. And it really makes sense. So the study was published in the American Journal of Public Health. It was a comprehensive 20-year examination of 800 kids from kindergarten through their mid-20s. It found that the children who were helpful and shared in kindergarten were more likely to have graduated college and have a full-time job at 25, while the children who had problem-solving, conflicts, sharing, cooperating, listening were less likely to have finished high school, college, and more likely to have substance abuse. So it's not just math and reading, writing, and arithmetic, it's your social skills as well. And children learning that from an early age is really going to benefit them for the rest of their lives. There you have it, the top health news you'll need to know for this week. For more health news throughout the week, follow me on Twitter at my handle at Dr. Daria, and also follow us at ShareCare Inc. Remember, you can find more of this at sharecare.com/radioMD. Thanks for tuning in, and stay well.